All right, let's go ahead and get started. Agenda is in IRC. Today on the agenda, we have reconsidering the prefix and suffix separator, adding container language, adding container ID, and the JSON-LD grammar. I think we may want to move issue 133, container language, up to the first item in the agenda, just because it would be a continuation of the discussion we had last week. Any other updates or changes to the agenda?
Just a little announcement. I'm actually speaking today at Stanford on JSON-LD, among other people, to the Protégé group. So
okay.
I've been doing some cool stuff with ontologies, JSON-LD, and creating editors, so I might be able to show a little bit of that there. But unfortunately, I can't show it more widely because it's work done for a client. But hopefully I'll be able to release that more generally.
Cool. No, that's great. It's fantastic. When's the NoSQL talk?
That is in August. I don't think I've got the date in front of me.
Okay.
And I haven't heard it. It's sort of a weird one. I haven't heard after I sent my blurb in, I haven't heard back on the status of that, but it should be coming up in about 4 weeks.
Okay. Cool. All right. I'm on Describe today. All right.
Could you post a link to the agenda? Thanks.
It is there. Okay, so first up, issue 133. Container language. So the discussion with Denny last week was good. I think that was a productive discussion to have, and I think it clarified that we need to have something like this in JSON-LD. I guess what I'm wondering is, as Nicholas said at the beginning of the call, it deviates a bit from the way that we've been doing JSON-LD. And the concern there is that it would cause confusion for people that are authoring JSON-LD documents. So one of the criticisms that we got for RDFA towards the end was that there are so many different ways to do things that they were afraid, and by day I mean the browser manufacturers, were afraid that the complexity of the language was too great, and therefore, they prefer microdata over RDFA. So I guess the concern here is that we're adding container language in, we're potentially going to add container ID in. And I guess the main concern that I have is, are we making the language too complicated, or is this something that there really is no way around? We really need to support the Wikidata use case, and the added complexity is worth the addition of them as a supporter of JSON-LD. Any thoughts on that from anyone? Greg, you're in the queue.
Yeah, I think the key coming out of that was not the specifics about being able to map language or ID. It's to be able to use object patterns where we're currently using array patterns. And this is a way to allow the use of an object pattern, which is key to enable the use of the JavaScript dot operator, and the same in other languages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the gist of all of these thoughts, really. And the question regarding the complexity, I think that it's, for me, it's not so much about the complexity of JSON-LD specification-wise, it's more about what to expect as a reader or consumer of JSON-LD? Given that the generic shape is entity attribute value all the time, and in this case we fold in a property value and use it as an attribute key. But just as Greg says, this is fairly idiomatic JSON. It might be a bit strange to say idiomatic JSON because JSON by its nature is used in extremely different context-specific environments. I mean, JSON is just the carrier of a specific slice or view of data, and that's very varied. I mean, there will always be shapes of JSON which we cannot reasonably support the structure of in JSON-LD because it so morphs the data it's built upon. I mean, for instance, sometimes you have keys which come from certain view-related contexts that have no reasonable semantic representation. I mean, if you view JSON like that and try to express those shapes with the triples, for instance, you will get very odd entities. Like this object represents the group of properties which are related to the side box even. I mean, some JSON is very strange like that.
Yeah, and I guess the other question I had was, it seems like the conversion to RDF, when we have stuff like language maps, is strange. It seems to be strange for RDF people. I don't think that's a big issue, but certainly like the triples that we end up generating are not in this simple, you set the subject, then you set the property, then you set the value. It's not this, entity attribute value thing, which is basically what we've been doing in JSON-LD and is what we do in RDFA. Now we're kind of hopping around where, you set the subject, and then you set the, then you set the property, but then you set the language before you set the value. Of the string. So it's a little, I don't know if it's a little backwards for RDF people, but at the same point I would expect RDF people to be able to do it, to make that translation in their head, I guess.
Well, and I think it's really not an issue of the RDF we produce, since I think the RDF we produce is sort of what was intended through the JSON-LD. It's just that looking at the JSON-LD, not knowing what the rules for that are, certainly can be confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a bit harder to guess the context. Often, if you see well-shaped JSON, you sort of can figure out what the corresponding JSON-LD context should be and just map things. But I think that both container language and container ID are, well, I not even that. I mean, I'm fairly for even container type and possibly even, maybe even container and then some, any kind of property, although that's really pushing it. But
I was going to suggest something similar, that maybe we can come up with a more generalized mechanism for solving the same problem, to let people create maps however they want.
Yeah, I think that's where we're heading towards that. And just as Greg succinctly said, it's about using the object pattern instead of array containers.
Yeah. So does anyone here have a handle on how we do that, how we genericize this?
I think if we say that container can be used for all of these cases, we could just extend the container definition to say that container defines the kind of object, an object in the sense of the JSON. If it's list or set, you use an array. If it's any other kind, you use an object which will represent a map of some value of the actual resources within this structure. And the exact property from which this value is gathered or retrieved is defined as the value of the container in the context.
I just pasted in some language I had put in earlier as to how this might be implemented. So basically, container language in this case is interpreted to mean that if the key value is of the form of BCP 47, which would be a language tag, then it basically has the result of sort of continuing processing after setting the value of language in the active context. So that's sort of the way in which it works. When you expand, then that means that sort of pattern goes away.
Right. Actually, this is a specific part of the general suggestion. And one thing I'm thinking of when considering this specific part is that maybe language could behave. I don't think we have any other thing that behaves. So that language, just like context, can be put into any object and override the current setting. That language doesn't have to be put within literals, but can be put anywhere, just like XML lang in XML-based languages. And it's inherited.
Right.
But you can do that anyway. You can put the context anywhere, and inside that context you can set the language, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You can achieve that effect by doing that with context. But if we allowed to put just language anywhere, that might make things more complex. I'm not sure if it does, actually. It depends on how you think of it. On the other hand, it wouldn't have to require this special rule that container language mean putting language within a context at the current place. It would simplify container language.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as well, but it's getting complex if you have whole subtrees under such a property, then, I think. Especially when you're looking at it from compaction, from that side of the algorithm.
Yeah.
You're still going to have to treat language a little differently with whatever the output is anyway. It goes inside of value. Whereas if we support these other properties or type or ID, they don't work the same way.
No, they don't, true. But the container mechanism works more generically in that it just injects the thing, what context has defined as a value is injected as a key with the map key as the value.
All right, so let's, what I'm hearing is that we have some general hope that we may be able to genericize this mechanism. But there are risks of making the algorithm more complicated than it is right now. So I think, again, what we probably need is we just need an implementation. We need one or two folks in the group to sit down and go through an implementation and see if we can genericize it, or if, you know, all we really need to do is container language at this point. The other option is to just implement container language and maybe container ID. based on, you know, solid use cases that we have right now, and we may be able to genericize it in the future, because, you know, the processing rules are meant to lift the data out of the documents and make it make sense in RDF, and, you know, make it make sense when you do compaction and expansion. But the algorithm to do that could change over time. So we could have a simplified algorithm today, which is effectively what Greg put in the IRC channel there, and maybe for JSON-LD, you know, 1.1 or 2.0, we end up making it a little more generic and supporting container and then anything on the right-hand side, properties or language or ID or things like that. So yeah, I guess what I'm saying is we need people to sit down and do an implementation, because I'm sure we could talk for a very long time on the potential ways that we could do this.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that we should stick to these. I think that container ID is interesting because it makes JSON-LD it makes it possible to use JSON-LD in a way similar to how RDF people use RDF JSON.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that's a good thing. Well, actually, I think that it would require us to be able to define either say that container for graph is ID, or make a keyword which is a graph alias with a container set to ID.
Okay, so let's go ahead and jump to then issue 134 and discuss container ID for a bit. I mean, it's effectively container language, but, you know, we're, you know, can anyone, can, are you hearing me?
Yeah, it's back. Sorry.
Sorry,
would you say that over again? It just, you,
sure,
you lost,
yeah,
your whole thing.
Was, yeah, it was my connection. I just saw it go red. So container language is, you know, we've been discussing container language, and container ID is effectively the same thing, but the properties are meant to be IRIs, full IRIs, I guess. And the reason, as Nicholas said, the reason we think that's interesting is because it would allow people to use JSON-LD like RDF JSON. But I guess the question is, do we really think that group is interested in JSON-LD, or would they just use RDF JSON, or do they even really care you know, about JSON-LD supporting it? I guess, is there any other use case other than the RDF JSON use case that we can see? Marcus, you're on the queue.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask something to container language. I wanted to ask if we have consensus whether we want to support whole subtrees in such a object or just literals. Because I think Danny and Greg are leaning more towards supporting whole subtrees, whereas, I don't know, at least I think you and me are more leaning towards literals.
So I don't quite understand the entire subtree statement. What do you mean by entire subtree?
If you have a container and then... Just a second.
You can look at my example comment here. Let me paste it in.
Yeah.
That's an example of using. So the value of the EN property, for instance, is an object, happens to be an anonymous object, which is where we got into the SCOS XL to be able to specify values within there, versus, as Marcus had been proposing, is that the value of sort of the language property would be just a string to which you would apply that language.
Mm. Yeah, I guess the concern here is that the data becomes so complex that it's difficult for developers to actually work with it, right?
Well, I just don't see that. It's basically, if you follow, I mean, I haven't dealt with compaction, but if you just look at the expansion text that I had pasted in earlier, all this means is that you basically continue processing the next level by updating the context with the language. That means that the active subject and active properties sort of remain the same. So processing-wise, I think it's fairly straightforward, and having to and restricting it to not using objects, or indeed objects that might contain other objects, seems one, needlessly restrictive, and two, it completely disallows the exact pattern that Denny was looking for.
I don't think it's that difficult to actually understand if you just look at each case separately. If you look at the compact form and you were just looking at it and trying to understand the data, I think it wouldn't be that difficult to do, especially if you're used to working with JSON. It's very clear that you have these different sub-levels and you get into English and has all the properties for English versus German. I'm just looking at Greg's example. And then if you're just looking at the expanded form, it's also fairly obvious how it works. It might be a little bit confusing thinking about how to go from compact form to expanded form, but the actual processing rules sound like they're not that complicated, and I don't know why anyone would really need to be thinking about how one converts to the other when they have the tools available to do it, and it's easy to understand in either form on their own.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same. The example should have, the label definition has context language. That should be container language, right?
Yeah. The typo in there.
I'll edit that right now.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with expansion and that it's quite understandable for developers or for authors, but if you look at it from compaction, I can't really see how it would work without injecting context where you reset the language, for example. So if you have like some sub-property which is not language tagged, you would have to either keep it in expanded form or inject a context which resets language, right?
Yeah,
Go ahead, Nicholas.
Okay, I think that this was this example when we discussed it. I think I thought that. In this case, I don't really recall the guidelines for using SCSS Excel exactly, but I think that perhaps using Dublin Core language would be more suitable, and that is why I brought up the idea of the generic container feature, so that instead of container with the value at language, we could use container and the IRI for Dublin Core language. That would just inject the statement that the current B node for the SCSS Excel label has the Dublin Core language set to something. Because I think that SCSS Excel literal form might even have us arrange, it might be a data type property with XSD string as the range. I don't recall, but
I don't think it was explicit on that at all.
No, it might. Right.
Yeah, and in fact, of course, now in RDF 1.1, all properties are data type properties, even language properties are data type properties.
Yeah,
what I was going to say, and I thought Marcus was sort of asking about, is what about the ambiguity? If in my example there are properties other than EN and DE under label. What's that interpreted as? My language basically says if that property is of the form of BCP 47. But in this case, you might also be able to have other properties at that level. It would be reasonable, though, for us to restrict it so that if something has container language, if I saw another misspelling in there, then all the properties of that, all of the properties of the object that is referenced from that thing must be of that form.
Right.
And that would also work better as the definition for container ID, where if you have container ID, then all of the things in the key position of the object that it's referenced by would be IRIs. That would allow us to use compact IRIs, relative IRIs, everything else as well, so that there was no case where you might be able to intermix things that were both subjects and properties at the same level.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think if you have these other properties mixed in that don't have languages and things, you just don't use this container type. I mean, we can just restrict it like Greg is suggesting. You need to comply with the rules, or it doesn't work for you.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Anything else would be very hard to understand. Just this specific example, I would probably, in the context, define the IPA to have a language of null or data type of XSD string, just to make sure that the pronunciation is, or data type and the actual data type. What did you say that it was called, Greg?
I'm sorry, what the...
The data type of the International Phonetic Alphabet, did you...
Oh, I didn't find a data type for it. Well, I've made up a... there is no property for it, IPA. That there is just a Wikipedia entry for it.
Right.
I spent some time looking for a vocabulary that actually defined that property. I couldn't find one. It looked like there might be one in SCOS. I saw some discussion about it, but it's not actually defined in SCOS right now anyway.
Right. You could add it to OpenVocab.org, perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps. I just thought it was a useful example that illustrated what Denny's usage pattern, where you wanted to be able to. Basically, this is like a form of reification where you're expressing metadata about the statement that is where the actual object is in the literal form.
Yeah.
And you could always make some other terms as well. You know, you could make another term for label and put all the other properties on there that don't have languages, correct?
Oh, yes, sure.
Yeah, and that seems like that would be the way that you would go ahead and do that.
Yeah. Yeah, in this case, I'd say label map or label by language, perhaps.
That might. I'm trying to think what the. Well, I guess the compaction rules would be fairly clear on that. It would just go to selecting the appropriate label to use. And in this case, given that the label was defined with container language, that would disallow your using it for things that didn't match that language. There's definitely some complexity in there, but I think it can be done.
Yeah, we'll have to define things like where type would end up, whether or not it goes into the map or it goes into the other term that is not a map.
Well, I just added type there just to be pedantic. I don't think you necessarily would end up specifying a type of that object.
Well, I'm just saying, if we wanted to be able to compact something using the language map, we have to be able to make the decision where to put properties like that.
Yeah.
Right, but I think type should be there. Is there anything?
I'm just saying, if there were a second term, if we had a label map and we had label.
Right.
We'd have to figure out where type should be and specify that in the algorithm. It might get a little bit weird to, you know, have all the other properties that don't have languages go into the term that isn't the map, and then be different for type. You know, we'll have to have that discussion.
Yeah, I absolutely think that the term wouldn't apply to anything which doesn't have language. You would use the full IRI for that property or search for another term without container definition.
Well, you could also do it having a language key, which is the empty string.
Yeah.
That's really dangerous. Dangerous with PHP, unfortunately.
Yes, thank you.
I think it's ambiguous. Perhaps you that would.
Yeah, that is pretty obscure.
Yeah, it's better to just, it doesn't match. It's like any other coercion mapping mechanism. It doesn't match anything about language.
My guess is that these become theoretical issues that we deal with in test cases and actually don't show up in real data.
No, the cases for using these container contexts using declarations would be very specific. I mean, you should probably stay clear from it in generic contexts and use it to expose very application-specific control data where you know that the shape is predictable.
Okay. So, Marcus, did you hear anything in that discussion that made you feel better about this particular feature of having trees instead of just simple values? So, in basically having entire subtrees instead of single values.
Could you have a look at the URL I just posted in IRC?
Sure. Hold on one second.
So, in there, I have two strings which are not language tagged, and in compaction, should they just remain in expanded form, or?
I'm sorry, I'm still trying. Can you walk us through this?
Okay, so basically it's just your example from the GitHub issue. I just added those two
value not language
those two properties in which are bold without language tag. And below that there's the compacted form. So should that property remain in expanded form, or should it be moved to a completely different property, so an expanded label, for example, or?
I think it probably should be in expanded form.
So just as it's typed in that.
Yes, because at least with the way that I was proposing it is the result is to set the key, the language specified in the key with it as the default language in the context. So given that that's the default language in the context, well, I guess the other way to do it, of course, would be to override the language definition of EX to say that the language is null.
Yeah. I was just going to type that out because I mean, it's hard to know what X means here because it doesn't mean anything. But the IPA property probably has at least a specific data type of string. So I would certainly define that as not having a language at all in the context.
Well, we do need to be careful about what it means to provide a data type of XSD string. I think the interpretation that the RDF working group requires is that if unspecified, then literal values have implicitly a language of XSD string. Now, we don't discuss that anywhere, neither does Turtle. It's really much more of an RDF model issue. But that is the way that a backend that's compliant probably should implement it, where if a plain literal basically gets the data type of XSD string.
Yeah, I don't think that language tag literals are XSD strings. If they have a data type, they have like RDF colon language literal,
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So they are disjoint.
Okay. So Marcus, is that are you happy with that answer? Is that fairly straightforward?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense.
Okay, so in general, I guess what we're hearing then is that people believe that we should be able to do the subtree thing without adding a lot of complexity, especially if we put a restriction on making sure that that's all you could really have. Basically, we're saying that if you're going to use language maps or maps of any kind, then your data is going to have a much more strict form than in some other parts of JSON-LD. Is that effectively what we're saying?
Well, I guess if we say something like that, what does a processor have to do when it encounters something which is does not conform to that? Ignore it?
Ignore it.
Do a callback or?
Well, I think right now that what we're doing is the ignoring it will call a callback to say that it's going to ignore something, that there's something that it detected and it's going to ignore it, and then the person can tell us whether or not they, Anyway, that's an API issue, I think. But we have a facility to report that something weird was encountered in the API spec. Okay. It sounds like we're at least homing in on some kind of solution here. But I think that only an implementation is going to raise all the hairy issues with doing this. One, the just container language, and two, trying to figure out if we can genericize this further. Any other concerns about container language before we, I guess, start discussing container ID and whether or not we want to support that?
Maybe the applying compaction with the context, like in the example which discussed Excel labels, is very tricky just because you have to do some kind of deep traversal and put things into different buckets.
So is that an argument against doing the subtrees, deep subtrees?
Yeah, it would be. Just some food for thought.
Yeah, I think the problem is that when you're doing expansion, you now need to know that you're in some context that prevents you from processing any deeper subtrees. And I think that actually makes it more complicated. If the existing language that I put in there basically just says you apply that language to the context and then you keep processing. Otherwise, you would need to add some state which now prevents you from doing any further processing, which just adds complexity.
Yeah, but in expansion, it seems simple. In compaction, I don't know really what to do. I mean, I don't know which key to pick before I've traversed all the objects referenced and categorized them by language to find any property describing this thing either has a language of something, which becomes the key, or no language.
It may be that this is not applied in compaction.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the deep thing is not.
If you're applying a context that contains container language, then you can't really use it in a context where it's not a language key.
Exactly. Only on language literals would it be usable. In that, in compaction.
Yeah, that would require you to traverse down, find a literal in the referenced object that has a language, and then use that.
Yeah.
In which case, what if there's multiple?
Yeah, the code would be like almost halfway to a reasoner.
Yeah, no, that is a, it is not simple.
No.
Yeah.
That argues okay. perhaps having something like a DC language element that's in there, as you were suggesting, Nicholas.
Yeah.
Because then you could look for that and then use that as the language.
Yeah, that's straightforward. It's the flat. You only have to skim the data.
Could you update the issue with some discussion about that?
Yeah, I think I can put something. There are a couple of examples here now. I'll see if I can.
Of course, the other thing is if we did allow something like language to be used as a key within a subject definition, then the interpretation could be to add that key to the when you expand, in which case when you compact now you look for that key and use the value of the language key.
Right.
Yeah, well, I guess we'd be putting in that feature just to make this work a bit more cleanly. I mean, I guess other people have kind of asked for it at different points during this process. I'm a bit concerned that we're now thinking about adding features just to make other features work more cleanly.
I think the answer is we're not done yet.
You're right.
Let's keep working on the issue.
Yeah. Okay. So let's discuss issue 134 very quickly. And this is the adding container ID. Let me put this back in here. So. Do we want to support container ID? I mean, I know that there's one use case that's on the table right now, which is RDFJSON. Do we feel that that's a compelling enough use case for JSON LD? Meaning, like, do we think that people actually, you know, would rather use that than just use N triples? I guess one of the positive arguments for that approach is that people wouldn't need to use N triples. They could just use JSON LD for everything. They could use it for, you know, an N triple slash N quads. They could use it for an object-based, you know, a representation of their data. But I guess the concern here is that if we do not genericize this, then it is one more feature that we're adding. That kind of changes the way you have to interpret the JSON LD data. So before people could kind of look at the JSON LD data and kind of figure out what's going on without looking at the context, now it's very difficult to do that. You have to look at the context before you start mucking around with the data.
Well, it's also you can't really do RDFJSON because in RDFJSON the keys of the top-level object are subjects, and with the container ID, it has to be an object which is the value of some other property. So, with this that proposal, it doesn't really allow us to completely duplicate that pattern.
Unless we can define the graph, a keyword, either define graph to have a container ID, but
yes,
or define an alias which is just by ID or by URI, because this is probably the way it would be used in the wild, even by
or
URL.
We could also just change it so that the object value of graph is a subject map without and actually not actually needing to do a container ID. right now it just sort of falls out of the fact that you can syntactically have graph with a object value rather than an array value. But we could change it for graph so that if it's an object value then it is a subject map without requiring any context definition at all.
Yeah. That wouldn't be too bad, I think.
So, Greg, just to make sure I understand you correctly, are you saying that inside graph, those could potentially be an object map? Or are you saying that if graph doesn't exist and we have a whole bunch of top-level URLs without a context, that would be interpreted as kind of an RDF JSON-y layout?
No. We have many examples for some time in which the entirety of the document is just one object. So I don't think we're gonna change that. However, graph is something that was more recently introduced. And the fact that we have graphs that can have a value of an object is sort of a convenience because it really is shorthand for an array of the containing that object. But we could change the processing rules so that if the value of graph is an object, then the keys of that object are treated as subjects.
Okay, and then you're saying basically if you have a graph with a single item in it, you would still represent it as an array to make sure that we didn't trigger the object map.
That's right.
Yeah, that could definitely work. Any thoughts on that? I guess the concern here is that you don't need to be able to do it at the top level. Well, I guess that's not quite true. I forget, do we support graphs way down deep in the subtree?
Yeah,
yes.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we'd be able to do this wherever.
Okay.
It seems like it could work.
Okay.
The only,
that's a potential solution.
The only problem is that we'd have to define a flag or something for the compaction because you wouldn't be able to see from the context definition that the graph is intended to be used as an object map, as an IRI map, or as an array.
That might be done by doing something like having @graph have a container of @ID. That might be the place we use that. That would tell the compactor how to represent things.
Yeah. If we can do that, then I think we're okay.
Okay. Okay, well, I mean, that seems like a fairly reasonable approach for the container ID thing. So we would have graph, and then inside that graph would just be a whole bunch of keys that are IDs to subjects, and then, I guess, properties within those, and then values within those, and that would allow people to use, you know, index based off of subject and then use dot notation to get to each subject's properties.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the question then, you know, we go back to the original question is, which is, how many people absolutely need this or really, really want this kind of feature? I can certainly see it being useful. But has anybody ever come across a case where they need it? I think, Greg, you said that you came across it when you were doing the RDFA test suite. Is that right?
Yeah. I had to sort of construct things to be able to use object patterns. And that's really the use case is that you you want to use objects. You want to avoid the use of arrays except where you really mean multiple values of some property. And this is a way of allowing you to further avoid the use of arrays.
Yeah.
Well, and this is really just about you want to get at subjects quickly without having to write queries to find them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that given that the RDF working group has shelved the RDF JSON standardization in favor of this, I recall during that discussion questions about if this was possible to do in JSON-LD popped up. At least Richard Siganiak had some question about it a long, long time ago, many months ago. I'm not sure if that use case has gone away for them, though, but I think that, I mean, you can traverse the graph, not backwards, but traverse it in general if you have a flat expanded form plus using graph with container ID, you would be able to use define keywords in your language of choice, JavaScript for instance, for any IRI of the properties and then look up the values in the graph dictionary. So if you want to traverse it with the full RDF knowledge intact, you could use it that way.
I don't want to explode the complexity here, but another thing that we could do if we're still talking, if we're still considering a generalizing container, we could possibly use it as a replacement for the query mechanism we were using in framing, generally because you sort of look for IDs or types for when you're trying to find the data that you want to work with, and if we could just put containers, container ID or container type, then you could just use it like a JavaScript object and get at the data that way.
Yeah. I came across the type case a while ago when I was tinkering with the IDs of Graphify and things like that, which are still not a table for me, but I think that if you just want to consume data through a very specific context definition, this general mechanism of using container to create maps of important values is very valuable.
Yeah.
And the notion of using objects as maps for certain values instead of filtering arrays is quite palatable for very specific scenarios. On the other hand, it does make the data you expose only usable for those scenarios. So we should be clear about that in documentation, if nothing else, that it's for specific usage only.
Yeah, I guess the concern here is that everyone would start using it that way and they completely miss the more general way that we expected people to use, JSON-LD, which is you just create objects and you send them back just like your regular JSON. You don't send back these indexed documents, indexed by subject documents back to the developer. But I think that's mostly a documentation concern. It's not a I guess the concern that I keep coming back to is that we're adding complexity to the language, and every time we add this complexity, we're saying, well, we don't expect people to really use this feature except for very specific corner cases.
Not really corner cases in this. I mean, we really need to throw examples at this before we should put it in as an experimental thing. We should really have a note saying, warning, this is might go away. Just like we ripped away vocab and base to see what happened to people's usage, we should put this in as a social experiment, so to speak.
I wonder if this is just a matter of of some usage of JSON directly versus, in my case, what I'm doing a lot lately is I'm basically putting the result into a bootstrap model, so a collection. So each for each value then becomes a model. It's much more convenient to have it in array form, and then the ID is sort of automatically used. So now I can get something from the collection by ID. The most convenient form for me is to have a flat representation, similar to what we do with the Flatten API. That's just the way that I specify my data, and that means I can go through and do Objectify or whatever with a very shallow traversal of the objects that come back. So if that is the way we expect people to be using JSON LT, is basically to drive RESTful applications, then I think keeping things in an array form and using the objectify, graphify type of things is really a very useful pattern.
Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say was that it does seem like we're sort of mixing features between what the API does and what the language has to say in the context. You know, we're starting to talk about how to shape the data in various ways, and that's effectively what the API was originally intended to do with framing, and with, you know, Objectify sort of come along and Graphify come along to try and take over. So maybe we're overstepping our bounds, or maybe we should try and restrict this stuff to be part of what the API does. I'm not really sure, but we're definitely talking about how to shape the data in a way so that it's useful for your application. At least it seems that way to me. It seems to be API territory.
Yeah. So the question then is it, should we have a way so that the result of sort of that step in framing, where you have basically a subject index, that actually is syntactically legal JSON LD, and that maybe we support that model basically just to be internally consistent rather than as a way of promoting a usage pattern.
Yeah. I think that in general, I mean, we don't know which group is more likely to pick this up in a grand way. I think that most, if you want to use compacted form, you want to send your data to people who only want to use your data in very simple one-off ways, in mashups and things like that. So you should send off data which is shaped according to a common usage pattern. And they are very different in general, and in certain cases these maps instead of arrays are very useful in those scenarios. So I think that we should really take a look at the different examples in the wild where maps are used, and see if this shape would be beneficial to those scenarios, because any of these scenarios are very unlikely to pick up the JSON LD spec and look for an implementation of an API using Graphify. I expect Graphify to be more for people who understand the graph model but don't want to use Hyoris's keys in triple stores, but prefer the way you can work with JavaScript or other dynamic languages and simple keys.
Actually, I don't think it's, and one of the reasons I don't care for Graphify, I think that's a little bit abstract, and this is the way that people expect to work with data, is they've got objects, and objects references other objects. The fact that JSON LD allows you to specify something that allows you to later go on and link things together is, you know, a real advantage, because I can do this not only when I have subject references within a document, but I can have references to other documents, and later on resolve those, load the document, go back, and now link the data together. So now what I'm doing is I'm creating a, you know, a connected object model within my application, rather than, of course, it's a graph, but that's not the way that I think developers think about their object references internally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there, you know, of course, there are use cases for each approach that we've been talking about. Otherwise, we wouldn't be kind of talking about it. But I do agree with what Greg's saying, is that they do, you know, I don't think that people are going to depend on an API for the vast majority of the deployed JSON-LD out there, right? They're just going to want to publish their data just like they've been publishing the JSON. And if we don't support a specific publishing pattern, then they're just not going to use JSON-LD. I don't think that they're going to ask the developers that integrate with their RESTful APIs to use the JSON-LD API to, you know, graphify or objectify the data. So if the layout of the data isn't useful to the people that are creating the REST web service APIs, then they're probably just not going to use JSON-LD. They're not going to look to the API to fix that problem.
True. I think that when I look at certain kinds of JSON, I mean, there are still limits to the absurdities you can go in mapping in general in JSON, even if we extend JSON-LD like this. But if we didn't add this feature of mapping behavior, we'd encounter lots of JSON where we would think, but that's not normalized data. But they would only say, we don't care about that because we care about the specific case. With this mechanism, we can clearly, in a JSON-LD context, say this object map means this expression. And just as with Greg's example in the issue, we can sort of glean that meaning, but with this extended container, we can specify it.
Yeah. Okay. So we're at the top. We're past the time that we should have ended the telecon. So these are all good discussions. I think, you know, again, next step is we just need to do some implementations on this and see how feasible it is to, one, implement container language, maybe modify graphs so that a single object, a graph with a single object reference is means, you know, you're doing the effectively container colon ID, and then figuring out if there's a way to genericize the container language to other attributes, to other properties, RDF properties. Okay, anything else that we should discuss before we hang up? I do have one last thing. Okay, so
I know one of the issues tomorrow is going to be the status of the patent agreements.
Yeah. So that was the thing I was just getting ready to talk about. No, totally fine. So we don't have Josh Mandel's agreement. I don't know if he's on vacation or if he didn't get the email or anything like that. So I don't think he has any. He doesn't have any desire to not agree to that. I think he's just he hasn't been checking his email. But there's nothing in the specs right now, I don't believe. We know that. There's nothing in the specs right now that Josh Mandel contributed to. His main contribution is in the issue tracker and the objectify calls. So we just wanted to get that down there before, just to make sure that the IPR is clean. I believe the IPR is clean the way it is. So we have everyone that needed to sign the IPR agreement has done so. And the Josh Mandel signature, the only reason that we needed him to do it is just to make absolutely sure that since he since he interacted with us on the issue tracker, to make sure that he's not going to, you know, raise any IPR concerns. But I don't think that's even if he did, I don't think that there's anything in the specs right now that would contain that, would contain any IPR that he, or would contain any IP that he contributed. Does anyone think differently about the specs? Does anyone know of any text in the specs that Josh Mandel contributed directly?
No. Have you tried reaching out to him again? Or
I'll try again today. But I did. I've done it twice over the mailing list. I mean, over the mailing list, he said, "Yeah, that's fine. I totally, you know, I agree. I release my." I release any IP stuff, but you can't do it over the mailing list. You have to use W3C's tool to do it.
And he's not a member of the community group, I don't believe, is he?
I don't think he is. That's correct. Maybe he is, but I don't remember him being...
I can look quickly.
Yeah. Looking as well.
No.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think that should stop FVWD. Just because there's no text that he's... We haven't accepted any patches from him. We have only interacted with him on the issue tracker, so I don't think that's that big of an issue. Okay. So basically what I'm going to do is tonight I'm going to write an email to the RDF working group and say that all the major IPR commitments have been made. The only commitment that has not been made is from Josh Mandel, and that we believe that's because we can't quite get in contact with him, but he did not submit any text to the JSON, to any of the JSON LD specs that are being published. The only contribution he had was to objectify, and that's still something that we're, you know, continuing discussion on, and we can just leave it at that. And if they're fine with that, we're going to end up doing an FVWD on Thursday for the JSON LD specs, the syntax and the API spec through the RDF working group. Okay. Any other questions?
Actually, just looking at that objectify. And the last thing that he has up there is 2 months ago, so I think he's probably hasn't been around, probably on extended summer vacation as with many other people.
Right. Okay. All right. Anything else?
Actually, I take that back. 12 hours ago, he had some public activity on GitHub.
Yeah, well, maybe we can ping him through GitHub.
Yeah.
Create a pull request and ask him to do a signed document. All right. That's it for this week. We may want to switch and do a couple of super sessions in the next month or two, mainly because we want to try and get these specs hammered out completely in the next 6 months, and the more we front load the work, the less we're going to have to deal with last minute issues, hopefully. So maybe not next week, but maybe the week after, we'll start doing super sessions again to get through all of the issues that are still open. All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great week, and we'll chat next week.
You too. Thank you.
Right. Bye.
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 Bye.